great, another political talk show. Just what America needs. It's time for something different. I figure if you're listening to me, you are obviously a person of very high intellect.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger. With your host, Kathy Wynn.
Hey, welcome to Don't Shoot the Messenger on Jackalope Radio. I'm your host, Kathleen Wynn, and this show is about politics. We hit the hot-button issues and political topics head-on and give our listeners straight talk about what the people we've elected to public office are doing to earn their paycheck and that very generous health insurance package that we pick up the tab for. Please check out our forums at www.jackaloperadio.com. Jump in on any discussion or start one yourself, but go there if you want to comment on this show in particular. So, today... What's up? Today we're talking about the State of the Union speech given by the president on Tuesday night. That speech itself is getting really high marks, even from conservatives, for the tone of fiscal responsibility. Specifically, the president said straight out that any bill that lands on his desk with earmarks will receive a swift and unceremonious veto. So we're going to all be watching that, and you can bet that the people watching that most closely will be conservatives, and they are just going to wait to jump on any way that he might deviate from that promise. If he keeps that promise, which I think he will, it will go a long way towards stealing the thunder from Republicans' fiscally conservative platform that they intend to use before the next election. So they are really going to be watching that. Not all conservatives had good things to say about the president's speech. So let's talk about Tea Party darling Sarah Palin. As you know, I do love Sarah, mostly because she gives such good sound bites for anybody in political commentary. She was interviewed by Fox News following the State of the Union address. And in her usual grammatically challenged style, she criticized the president's theme of winning the future. Sarah reduced that to an acronym WTF. And as most anybody who uses the internet knows, those three letters are commonly used in place of what the heck. But obviously that last word doesn't start with an H, it starts with an F, and we all know what that means. So, very classy, Sarah, thank you. I have an interesting little fact also concerning Sarah Palin. A recent poll showed that if the election were held today, she would lose to President Barack Obama by a margin of 26 points. In another poll, if the election were held today, she would lose to my goldfish by 20 points and to my crockpot by about 15. So, make of that what you will. Anyway, so Sarah, when asked if she believes she's hurting the Republican Party by dividing it and possibly acting as a spoiler in the next election, this is what she said. I'm going to read this quote, but please bear with me. I have a cat with greater command of the English language than this woman, and trying to get an understanding of what she's attempting to say is always a challenge. But here it goes. Here's what she said. I've been accused of dividing within that establishment of the Republican Party, too, for some years now. She continued, and I don't see it as division. If you have trouble following this, you're not the only one. But she goes on to say, this is one thing that I love about the Republican Party, you know, and we don't have the fighting instincts of a bunch of sheep, like I think a lot of Democrats do. I'm wondering where Sarah Palin last saw a flock of sheep, because they're really not known for being aggressive animals, certainly not engaging in any kind of aggressive behavior towards each other. But that was her idea on how the Democrats deal with each other. So, on to, let's see, we're gonna skip Sarah now and move on to the State of the Union, as the president put forth on Tuesday. And I'm going to have a little help with today's discussion from a gentleman who owns a small business, lives in a rural community just about an hour outside the greater Kansas City, Missouri metropolitan area, and describes his political leaning as libertarian. I asked today's guest, Dave Alberti, to be on the show today. First of all, because I, as often as possible, I really want to have people on this show who don't see things necessarily the same way that I do. And I am very open to anyone that can bring a different perspective to political issues. So Dave, he not only has his own particular political viewpoint, but he operates and owns a small business and lives in a rural area. And I know that he has concerns and issues that he'd like to see addressed that are probably different than my own. So, Dave, welcome to the show, and thanks for being here. I'm going to ask you, Dave, to just introduce yourself a little bit and tell us a bit about your business and your background. Hey, Dave.
Hello.
Yeah.
Well, you're welcome. The businesses we have are part of a biotech cluster that we're trying to start in our little town. One is an aerosol science and technology company, services-based company, and the other one is a scientific instrument manufacturing company.
What does that mean, Dave?
We build stuff.
You build
stuff. We're innovative.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious what you personally, and this doesn't have to do necessarily with anything involved with your business specifically, but what did you generally think about the president's speech? Just your overall idea of it, impression.
Well, I think it was a really great speech. I think that he was conciliatory without being defensive.
Yeah.
To business and to banks, which have been vilified recently. And not entirely unjustifiably in a lot of cases. There's some bad actors, bad apples out there. It was apparent that he wasn't going to quit with his agenda, and he's pushing and supporting technology innovation, and I like hearing that.
Yeah, because your company, I as a matter of fact, I need to just, in the interest of disclosure, just let it be known that Dave is a personal friend of mine. I do know him. And I know that your business, Dave, is very high-tech and very much in the scientific realm of industry. So I'm just curious, as that kind of a business, what you feel about what he said about small business and what he said about advancing America's technology and scientific research?
Well, that's always been one of the strengths of the U.S., and that's one of the reasons that people have come here for decades for an education in technology. It's apparent to me that we can be very competitive. Our products are welcomed worldwide. We get inquiries all the time from all over the world. So I think we have that leadership, and we need to further that. So pushing that, and especially in energy and technology, makes a lot of sense. America's competitive in a lot of ways now with the rest of the world, partly due to exchange rates. Those
right.
are very favorable with doing business with other developed nations and developing nations that have substantial technology needs. Another thing that I liked about his technology initiative was that he picked energy. And picking
yeah.
energy as something to develop, and especially with the audacious goals that he presented, that could reduce our susceptibility to oil shocks. A lot of what he was proposing to do, you know, investing in the future, might sound like it's spending, for the sake of spending, but spending with an expected payback really is investment. I think that should be focused on.
So are you, so Dave, as far as your own company itself, which I know to be a pretty high-tech company, when he talked about the advance, the United States government being able to advance technology and research scientifically, does that make you feel optimistic? Do you think that that's a good way for America to be spending its resources right now?
Yeah, it does. I'm optimistic partly because of that, but partly because of the real-world affirmation.
Yeah.
Interest in our product and sales overseas. Our products are in 18 countries now. And so I see the real benefit. We get the orders here, we make stuff, and we ship it.
Right.
So I know it works.
Right.
Also, there's one thing that's been glossed over a little bit in that area, and that is the administration's steps to make exporting easier. That's not something new with this speech. That's something that's been in the works for 2 years, and it's already starting to make a big difference. I think over the next couple of years, the administration's going to do some things that really make it very much easier to export technology, yet maintain some control over it, and that's important to companies like mine.
Wow. So, okay. So I'm gonna kind of go back to not necessarily the global scale of a business like yours, but I just want to ask what you think people, because I know you live in a rural community outside of Kansas City. It's unusual for a high tech kind of scientific and technologically advanced company to be located in a rural community, but you are. And so I'm just curious what you see around you in that community. What do you see from the people, other business people that you are sort of, you know, companion with, and whether or not they see the benefits of what the president's speech the other night was advocating. Do you see that?
Because
I think a lot of people get the idea that in small rural communities, a lot of times people are resistant to new ideas, especially technology, maybe, and scientific research. It all can seem a little bit daunting and government controlled and whatnot. So what do you see from the people in your own community?
Well, they are pretty independent, and you described my independent leanings well as a libertarian. I think the political spectrum is a circle, though, not a line. And so I think libertarian thought can go so far to the right that really it meets up with the extreme left. So I think I see that here in my little town. We really are right on Main Street, and so we see the effect of Wall Street to Main Street activities. People here pay a lot of attention, and they there are a lot of businesses here that are trying to expand and develop. Some of the initiatives that could be pushed with connectivity, for instance, are very well received here. One of the big issues in town is the high-speed wireless and high-speed internet connectivity. But one of the other connectivity goals that the president talked about was high-speed rail, which folks around here laugh about a little bit, although this is a railroad town. It's conceivable that they could be hooked up with that. But they view the internet as the highway of the future and the highway that they're on that connects them to the rest of the world. It's the reason that we're successful here. It's an internet overnight delivery world, and so you can start a high-tech business anywhere.
Right.
Rural locations near a metropolitan area are a perfect opportunity to do that. So investments in that kind of infrastructure are really an investment in productivity to me, and that's why it'll help the country as a whole grow, small towns like mine, but across all of the U.S., and
right.
That competitiveness is what will make us more successful in the world.
Right.
And decrease our trade imbalance, and that's going to benefit all of us. I think that's where the investment comes in and where the money will come back that's going out
right
now. A little out now, economic development will pay us back in spades later.
Right.
So I support it.
Okay, so Yeah, because that goes back to what the president talked about as far as he mentioned internet access and how there are other countries. For example, South Korea apparently has a very aggressive program of connecting everybody to the internet. And so you would see that as a positive thing in rural areas in America too, right?
Very much so. And it's not just for social networking. I think that's fine. Social marketing can help us, and it can help connect people in generally so that they don't feel disconnected in a small town.
Yeah.
But it connects business. It gives us the ability to fill out the forms we need to for export right at the desk in our office. And then have UPS come and pick them and take them to the world. So that connectivity is much better than the old days of trying to call somebody up on the phone and get something done.
Right, right, right. So I'm going to ask about a couple of just practical things now that the president addressed in his speech. And one was that he said just straight out, all businesses will be able to write off the expense of new investments that they make this year. I have a feeling that you are viewing that kind of a statement with a little bit of cynicism, because I would. It's like, what exactly does that mean? You can write off the expense of any new investment that you make this year. But what do you think that means? And in terms of your own company, do you see that as something you can utilize?
Well, I don't know that it's exactly anything new. Most investment can be written off or written down as business expense and always has been against an operating cost. One of the things that he said that I read between the lines was that he was going to reduce unnecessary burdens on small business that were replaced by the health care bill. One of those that isn't known by a lot of people is that there was a provision in there that would require small businesses to send a 1099 for anything to anyone that they paid more than $500 in a year, which would mean things like your water bill, your electrical provider, your telephone service. And so I think they're going to correct that. So they see some of the excesses that were inadvertently maybe buried in that bill or maybe overtly put in that bill to try to increase revenue and balance the budget and balance pay for those mandates.
Right.
But I see it as a chance to smooth it out and continue to make things better. So I appreciated a start towards bipartisanship at looking at these things and to see the possibility that the parties in Congress could work together to straighten some of these little things out that need to be kind of smoothed out and polished up so that things will work and function.
Right, sort of along the lines of the salmon deal where freshwater salmon are under the jurisdiction of one department and seawater salmon under the jurisdiction of another. So that kind of, I think you're right, he's kind of trying to address the bureaucratic bloat in places like that where it's just causing confusion and paperwork unnecessarily.
Yeah, and things get a lot more complicated when they're smoked, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I wanted to ask also about this because the president referred to this time in history as our Sputnik moment. And basically, He was referring back to, obviously, when the Russians launched the Sputnik, and they got into outer space ahead of us. And John F. Kennedy pretty much paid attention to that and said, well, we're gonna get to the moon first. And sure enough, we did. But I wonder how much you think government should be involved in Sputnik moments. How much are taxpayers expected to contribute to investment in scientific research and space technology and any technology? I mean, how do you feel about that? Do you think there should be it should be driven by the market, by the free market, or
the function of government in that realm is to fund the basic research that doesn't have a practical application that could be sold commercially.
Hmm.
Hey, that's the Sputnik moment. You don't sell a space shot commercially like that. It's a vehicle for developing technologies that then go into every aspect of society. Those advance our capabilities to to do a lot of things that make us more competitive making products.
Right.
So I support that. It's a small investment as a percentage to make in what then becomes a large amount of commercial activity. That function, for instance, the National Institute of Health, makes America extremely competitive in the rest of the world, where basic research is concerned. That's in danger here in the last couple of years. Some people have said that it could be game over for medical advances, drug advances, treatment advances, and that other places in the world with less regulatory burden will become the places to do that kind of research. So I think it's important that there's a national initiative that can coordinate those functions, not just fund the research, but use a good, solid peer-reviewing process to make sure that good things are funded. And
right.
I always, as a libertarian especially, I enjoy seeing people get skewered that research silly things. But sometimes something silly looking on the surface may actually have a deeper purpose where basic research is concerned.
Right, sure.
I consider those things leverage. I mean, that's an enabling function of government, like building an interstate highway, like building a national electrical grid, like building other parts of our technology-based society that help us solve problems and help keep us in the lead. And so I think that it's got to be balanced. There needs to be a practical approach to that.
Mm.
This shouldn't be a gravy train, but I think it's very necessary for competitiveness, which is, you know, this whole thing is a contest. Other people in the world aren't going to quit, so we shouldn't quit either.
Right. I agree. Well, one of the other things that he spoke about in this speech was the importance of education in terms of the United States staying competitive in science and technology. And I know with the kind of company that you have, that you have to find people that with very, very particular skills and scientific background. So I'm just curious, did you have any trouble finding people like that to staff your company?
Well, it might have been one of the silver linings of the economic downturn for us, because a lot of those people are on the prowl for work right now.
Yeah.
so we really have it, although I see your point, and you know that's another function, I think, of certainly state government, if not federal government, is to help and further education of our citizens on a somewhat equal footing.
Yeah.
I would hate to go back to the days where only the rich could educate their children.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of very talented people who aren't endowed with any kind of family fortune. In fact, it seems to me kind of the other way around. Oftentimes people who are endowed with a family fortune grow up trust fund babies without a lot of initiative to do anything. So,
right. Paris Hilton being a good example. But I digress.
Yeah, she does a lot for the internet, I think. I've heard that Twitter, you know, is very successful because of her.
Yeah, and I understand also for the tiny dog breeding industry also, she's a big boon. So she's doing her part, but it's not really necessarily in the areas that America really needs for advancement of our own technology and scientific endeavors.
Right, and I think that education is another one of those that pays back. People that are educated help
so
us compete,
true.
And I know I keep going around a tired old wheel, but they make more, they pay more in taxes, and it floats the whole boat. So.
Yep.
Even a libertarian can like that. Aren't you going to pick anything I disagree with?
Am I going to what?
Aren't you going to pick anything to talk about that I disagree with, Harley?
Okay, hey, Dave, we're going to go to a break. And I'm going to think of some things that I know that you will disagree with me on to come back with. But so hang on. We're going to go to a little musical break.
On the dark side, oh yeah, on the dark Nightbreed Show.
Look at Draxel. Boo Boo needs to give Ghost Getter a karate chop in the nads.
The Nightbreed Show.
Because I don't like to waste my time on people that are really not worth wasting their time on.
With your host, Mike Ghost Getter.
Well, you know, it's getting dark, and I don't think I want to be by myself out in the middle of nowhere looking at these lights, because I'm going to be afraid an alien's going to come down and, you know, probe me or something. But then I just turned around and said, nah, I'm going to go home.
Friday nights at 9 p.m. Central, only on Jackalope Radio.
Jackalope Radio.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger.
You're listening to Don't Shoot the Messenger with your host, Kathy Wynn.
We're back. Thanks for joining us today. And if you are just joining us right now, we are Don't Shoot the Messenger on Jackalope Radio. And we are talking to a guest who, Dave Alberti, who lives in a rural community outside of the Kansas City area. And Dave happens to own a business that is engaged in very sort of scientifically and technologically advanced enterprises. And we're just talking to Dave about the President's State of the Union address, what his thoughts are on it. And hoping to sort of find out what people who are in his situation as far as small community, small business owner, science and technology type of business, what his take is on how the government wants to go forward on those kinds of initiatives. So, Dave, we're back to you. And you were talking on the break about the importance of energy initiatives by the government to help. You actually don't feel that products that people can buy into will actually help conserve energy or help in that green kind of initiative. That was a terrible question. I'm sorry. I sounded like Sarah Palin. I apologize for that.
Where are we going with this thing?
I was channeling Sarah Palin.
Well, golly gosh.
Well, you know what you were talking about at the break was that if government does help people give incentives to buy energy efficient cars and solar panels for their house and whatnot, you know what I mean.
Well, again, I don't know what Governor Palin would think about that, being from Alaska. I know they're an energy exporting state, and I don't think that the two issues, I suppose, that they don't account for the real costs of the current gas-powered, fossil fuel-powered economy properly. Yeah. It rides on the back of the environment. And if those costs were truly accounted for, it would be attractive to buy a Chevy Volt. I would like to buy a Volt because it's an attractive thing to buy because it takes all the costs into account. And I think that's a libertarian point of view, is what is the real value of things? Let's not have subsidies skew things either direction. So I'm not in favor of a subsidy towards buying a Chevy Volt. I'm not in favor of the government subsidizing ExxonMobil's offshore drilling either.
Right.
And
right.
I think if that was really left to the market, the Volt would be a real attractive alternative.
Well, I mean, despite the fact that our entire transportation system is built on gasoline-powered cars, would you still
think,
isn't it going to take a certain amount of government incentive for people to want to change over, not just market, because what would the market offer somebody who wants to just stay with the status quo? Because I look at those tiny little cars that they have on commercials, little smart cars, and my thought is, I'm not driving that till everybody else on the highway has one, because there are people out there with Hummers.
Right. So, well, some of them out here drive Hummers just because of the deer. But, I understand what you mean. And high-speed rail would be even safer then.
Sure. Yeah. But, I mean, what is the incentive? If government doesn't get involved in encouraging people to change over from one energy, the one way that they can rely on, they always have relied on and know. If government doesn't get involved in saying, you know what, here's another alternative, and we're going to give you a tax credit so that you can get used to it and introduce it to us, what incentive is there for people to change?
Well, I think we can go backwards as well as forward that way. I mean, the people rode trolleys and took the train before they got used to cars, and cars were attractive because of the economic setup. I mean, those are the costs to the environment weren't accounted for. The government could, you know, impose taxes on gasoline that accounted for those costs and help reverse those costs. Right now, those are just distributed equally to everybody. People that don't drive, people in other countries who don't even have cars, we're all passengers on this planet. So I think if those costs were, you know, driven by international treaties, that's a function of the government as a whole, not to subsidize or make rules about my own personal transportation.
Okay, so you see it as a function of our government to work with other countries so that we're all working together on ways to deal with global warming and the energy crisis.
Right, and then that's a competitiveness issue, and it's an efficiency issue, and so that's where it comes back home to me. And I see that efficiency and that competitiveness and innovativeness, and then it's an opportunity for our scientists and engineers to come up with the best electric cars or hydrogen-powered cars or wind-up cars, whatever it is that's going to be the best, and then compete internationally with that on a level playing field, which that's not the case now.
Right.
So a libertarian would throw out, you know, like me, would try to throw out some of those anti-competitive rules and subsidies that have set us up for possibility for big, as I mentioned before, oil shocks, et cetera. If we can wean ourselves from oil a little bit, it will make for a more stable business environment, a little bit more predictable energy supply. The sun, for instance, is fairly predictable, and solar power, even though it's on in the daytime and off at night, there are ways to deal with that. It's pretty predictable.
Yeah, right. Well, just moving on to some other ideas. One of the things the president also talked about in his speech was the need to improve and maintain our infrastructure. And you live in a small community outside of a major metropolitan area, and so do I. And so you and I both know we have to drive on these highways almost every day, if not every day, to get to places where we have to go. He specifically made comparisons with South Korea, and they are they're basically very advanced in making internet available to all of their citizens. He also talked about Russia and Europe and the fact that they're building big new airports, faster rail systems. So do you think, as a libertarian, again, and I think your idea is, or your sort of take on things is basically let free market take care of things and let government get out of the way. But do you think investment in areas like infrastructure, airports, rail systems is justified, especially given the budget constraints that we're looking at now?
Well, I think they just need to be paid for by the users, primarily. So roads should be primarily paid for by use taxes, such as gasoline taxes. Those are actually lower than they should probably be based on the cost of providing those services. It's not a cut-and-dried situation, though, of course, because you and I and Grandma all eat food that was brought to the grocery store in a truck.
Right.
So how's that going to get there? I mean, that truck should pay fair share of taxes to upkeep the road, and that cost should be reflected in the food. But the free market can keep some of that on track, but where it requires an interstate level playing field, I don't think that the founding fathers really envisioned this issue when they wrote the Constitution and the Commerce Clause, but I think that trying to ensure some kind of baseline service is a function, and that's a valuable function of the government. I'm not sure I want a patchwork of toll roads again.
Right.
subsidies that take the effect of stimulus for work, harken back towards the Depression era WTA to me, and some of that, arguably, even to any economist, will say that was good for the economy and helped pull us out of that depression without a war economy. And I'd be interested in seeing the data when this all shakes out. I'm hesitant to say that we should just let the roads and infrastructure crumble to save money when that can inhibit competitiveness and can inhibit business.
Right.
And inhibit the ability of people to safely get to work and other things like that.
Right.
There'll have to be some kind of transition. But yeah, I think I don't have the figures in front of me on gas taxes, but it's been suggested that it should be more like 50 cents a gallon to pay for roads and infrastructure on a more fair footing.
Right.
And you're not going to get the gasoline companies to distribute that. I think
no.
It has to be a function of government to tax and administer that.
Impose that, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I have this question for you. Do you feel optimistic after this speech? Do you feel optimistic about the future of scientific research and technology in the United States? And do you think that, at this point we've maintained a lead in those areas for several decades. Do you think that we're going to be able to continue to do that, given the budget constraints, again, that we're under? Do you feel optimistic about those areas being able to be advanced?
I think so. I think I am optimistic. I think we need to lighten up a little bit on some of the constraints that have been put in place in the name of security. Patting everybody down and making them take their shoes off to travel on planes and restricting inflow of brain power into this country and into our universities out of fear of other people in other countries, I don't think is as well-founded as it may seem on the surface. I think those who give up their freedom aren't necessarily deserving of it. So I would rather see information and forthright communication continue and take the place of that kind of fear and hunkering down.
Right.
That's what scares me more than our innate ability. I think Americans are just by birthright some of the most creative, innovative, and hardest working people on the planet. So it's hard to keep us down. So I'm always optimistic.
Well, I'm kind of switching gears here, but from the science and technology aspect of this discussion, to just as a small business owner, I'm curious what you think about healthcare reform and how that's going to affect your business. And are you worried about what that means in terms of providing insurance and benefits to your employees? Or do you think that it might possibly offer some benefits?
Well, I think that's one of those issues where I'm so far libertarian probably that it brings me around to the other side of the coin. I think, to put things on an even keel, you can look at the little businesses like ours competing with some giant corporations.
Dave, I hate to interrupt, but I'm sorry, but how many people do you employ at Alberti Labs?
A dozen.
So you have 12 people. Okay, go on. I'm sorry. I think that's important.
Sure. Well, yeah, a company with a dozen people can provide health care in a small plan. You might hear of a company such as Walmart using Medicare and public subsidy and food stamps to augment what they pay their people so that they can buy. It's a company program to help people get on assistance. If there's a national program that can make that a little bit more level playing field, maybe it's a humanitarian or maybe it's a liberal point of view, but I think we're all created equal, and there ought to be some kind of level of care and for all citizens so that people don't fall through the cracks just because they work for one company or another. And to give us a competitive disadvantage to a large company that can be organized, take advantage of public funding for providing benefits to their for the workers doesn't seem, from a libertarian standpoint, to be a fair thing either. So
no, you're sounding very much like a liberal progressive there, Dave.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it probably sounds like a communist.
But as you said, it's all circular, right? It's not a straight line. It's we all come together on certain areas. At least I think if people are intelligent and reasonable, I agree with you.
Yeah, well, I would like to see it come to some kind of a. Now, on the other side of that, I also think that there are excesses of public benefactor programs.
Yeah,
where the private sector and social organizations, churches, other functions of society can pick up some of the slack.
Yeah.
So it's not just a government problem; it's all of our problem. And I think a return to a great society would mandate that we think that way.
Right. Right. Yeah, I would agree. I don't think there's any one single answer to the difficult financial problems that face our country right now, especially given the just astronomical deficit that we're facing. But, gosh, Dave, thank you so much for weighing in on all of these issues. I really appreciate it. I'm just curious.
Good show.
Sorry?
Good show. I as a libertarian, you know, I not a big believer in gun control, but I won't be shooting the messenger.
Please don't shoot me. And you live close enough to me that you could shoot me if you wanted to. But please don't do that, Dave. I know I don't need to worry about that with you.
I'm a vegetarian, so I don't have a gun like that.
Well, I'm just trying to think of a way to wrap up this conversation with you because it has been so interesting, and Todd's giving me his five-finger thing, which means I have to end it very quickly. But, Dave, if there's one thing you want to wrap up this interview with, go for it. If there's any one thing you want to say just before we end.
I still want to know some more about the fighting instinct of a flock of sheep. What did he put on that?
Okay. Okay, well, you asked, so I have to go to this. Apparently, Sarah Palin made a reference in her interview with Fox News after the president's speech, wherein she said, I'm just scanning here, but basically she said that Republicans are not so competitive and hostile to each other as Democrats, who are more like sheep that attack each other. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but I promise you, you can Google this after you get off, and you'll come up with this quote of hers, which basically says that, okay, here we go. I have it. This is an exact quote. This is what she says. "This is one thing that I love about the Republican Party. We believe in competition even within our own party, you know. And we don't have the fighting instincts of a bunch of sheep like I think a lot of Democrats do." So I'm not sure what flock of sheep that she has been observing anytime recently. But my parents had sheep. They lived on a farm. And I can tell you they are the least aggressive animals in the world. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to read that quote, because it's great.
Okay, well, great. Thanks for having me on your show.
Dave, thank you so much for all your comments and your insightful thoughts. I really appreciate it.
I'll look forward to next week.
Okay, bye. Okay. And that was Dave Alberti, our guest today, and talking about the president's State of the Union address. And so we're ready to get out of here, but just want to say, join us next Thursday. We'll have another show with guests who hopefully can offer a lot in the way of political discourse. So please come back.
Sounds like you're reading People Magazine or something.
I know. I'm sorry.
I'll do it.
Okay, here we go. This is what I'm going to end this show with, and this is a quote from Mr. Barack Obama, President of the United States. And this is what he says: At stake right now is not who wins the next election. After all, we just had an election. At stake is whether new jobs and industries take root in this country or somewhere else. It's whether the hard work and industry of our people is rewarded. It's whether we sustain the leadership that has made America not just a place on a map, but the light to the world. The light to the world, America. I love that. The light to the world. It's so true. And he goes on to say, we are poised for progress 2 years after the worst recession most of us have ever known. The stock market has come roaring back. Corporate profits are up and the economy is growing again. So here we go, America. We're on the growth once again. Bye. See you next Thursday.
There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. I peep up. There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Well, I say, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yes, what a wonderful day. Y'all look out there. I've got a beautiful feeling. Everything going my way. Y'all come on now. Cattle are standing like statues. The cattle are standing like statues. They don't turn their heads as they see me ride by. But a little brown maverick is winking her eyes. She said, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yeah. Well, what a wonderful day. Y'all know, I've got a beautiful feeling. I've got everything. And everything going my way. Everything going my way. My way. How y'all doing to me now?
Shoot the Messenger with your host, Kathy Wynn, a Jackalope Radio production.
All the sounds of the earth are like music. The sounds of the earth are like music. The breeze is as busy, it don't miss a tree. And a little old weeping willow is laughing at me. She said, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yes, what a wonderful day. Y'all, I got a beautiful feeling. I got everything. I got everything. I got everything. Woo! Everything's going my way. I'm sorry. But I got everything going my way, my way. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. I wanna thank you, little girl, for such a wonderful day. I got a beautiful feeling.
things going my way.